Good morning and welcome to episode 9 of our Rural Roundup with Tom Wills podcast series. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing at Sintons, joined as usual by Tom Wills, who is a partner and head of the Agriculture and Estates Department here at Sintons. Our guest speaker today, and delighted to have her here, is partner Emma Saunders from our Contentious Probate Department. And today, together, they are going to discuss potential challenges post-death. So without any further ado, Tom is going to start the podcast. Tom, good morning and over to you.
Good morning, David. Thank you. Yeah, a little bit of a somber topic to some extent, but succession planning is important for every family, every rural estate, everyone altogether. It's very important that everyone knows what will happen to assets, but also that affairs are in order for everybody to allow the things that are difficult to be perhaps less difficult, if you like. It's a horrible topic, death, passing away, but it happens to us all, so it's something we need to take seriously and be aware of and plan for. I'm delighted that Emma Saunders, one of my colleagues, is with me today. Emma specialises in a number of things regarding wills and how they are administered and checks that people are happy with the administration of those and what they say. So, Emma, probably best to get your expertise in on this. Can someone in England and Wales simply leave their estate to whoever they like?
Well, yes, they can, Tom. That's a sort of important fundamental part of law in England and Wales. The issues arise, though, if this creates a disgruntled or disappointed party, which could then lead on to a lengthy and costly dispute. It can also lead to family relationships deteriorating or even breaking down it completely, which is not unusual in a lot of the cases that I deal with. And obviously that's something that with a bit of planning and perhaps a bit of advice during their lifetimes, people can look to avoid happening after their death.
Yeah, no, that makes an awful lot of sense. It's making sure that people, I suppose, are aware and that these difficult times don't necessarily happen or are avoided if at all possible. What kind of disputes do you sometimes see? What might be perhaps common on a day-to-day basis or that come across your desk fairly frequently?
Yeah, I mean, there's estate disputes, there's a wide variety, but I think there's probably sort of four main categories that they fall into. So firstly, challenges to the validity of a will, which I'll come on to and explain in a little bit more detail. There's claims under the Inheritance Act 1975. There's proprietary estoppel claims, which are particularly important in the nature of farming estates. And then also more general administration disputes, which cover quite a broad range, but are incredibly frequent and something we deal with on essentially a daily basis.
You mentioned there, Emma, that people could challenge a will. What kind of grounds could people look at challenging a will? What would the basis of such a claim perhaps be?
Mm-hmm. Will challenges are sort of, I think, increasingly common. They're most often brought by those who expect to be included as a beneficiary in a will, but aren't. So that could be perhaps an strange child who believes they should be in their parents' will. And if that person would receive more from the estate under an earlier will, so perhaps they got greater provision under a will that was made years before, or if they'd get more under the laws of intestacy, if that person perhaps hadn't made an earlier will, then those are the sort of people that might look to challenge a will and might be for their financial benefit. So will challenges are generally brought on the basis that the person making the will either lacked the testamentary capacity to do so, which is essentially down to their mental capacity to make a will, could be challenged on the basis they didn't know or approve the contents of their will, or it could be quite commonly alleged that someone was unduly influenced into making a will in certain terms. But a lot of will challenges are made on more than one ground, so it could be any of those three or indeed others that are less common, but often a variety of those are all in the same dispute. And then obviously we've had with the COVID-19 pandemic, there's other concerns have been raised about people making homemade wills. There's certain things you have to do to make a proper valid will, and it's not something that the general public always know about. So there is a risk if people are making them at home, then they may not be making a valid will. So it's always important to have a solicitor involved.
Thanks, Emma. And I think there's a couple of things in there that kind of come out stark points to me. One, make sure that when you're making your will, it's made clear that you have that required capacity. And if there's any evidence that you're to can hang on to at that time, it would probably help, I would have thought. But also what you mentioned there about, you know, homemade wills, I sometimes, well, frequently get asked by family members, friends, or people that I come across who talk to me about the wills that they've had, or they've been offered a free will from so-and-so, or if you could echo anything, it would be to make sure you've got someone who is properly qualified to do your will and you know exactly what you want and that they've carried out your wishes correctly in that document. So we, of course, do that here at Sintons, but there are a lot of good, competent people, but we could certainly help you with that. But please don't fall down the path of trying to think, I've got got this really cheap, because that might not necessarily end up being cheap with tax provisions, etc. in the future. So I think exercise caution there. If somebody was wanting to avoid a potential challenge to their will, say, for example, they were wanting to make gifts to people and they thought that could perhaps be contentious when that will was read out following their passing, is there any kind of advice you would give to avoid that potential dispute?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that people can do to kind of reduce the risk of a will challenge. I mean, quite frankly, it's impossible to fully extinguish the chances of a will challenge, because you simply can't stop people doing certain things after your death, but you can sort of reduce those risks. So as you mentioned just previously, involving a solicitor is really important. If you involve them in the preparation and execution, which is the signing of your will, then that can really help to address the potential challenges after your death. So for example, on the grounds of testamentary capacity, you may be advised by your solicitor to get a medical report from your GP or perhaps from some other medical professional, which can then be used to fend off any challenge on the grounds of mental capacity. So if you are unwell or if you're suffering from a certain illness, certainly your solicitor may want to do that. And I think the important thing to say is not to take offence if your solicitor is suggesting you get a medical report. It's not because they are suggesting that you don't have the capacity to make a will. It's simply that they want to protect, you know, your estate going forward. And after your death, they don't want a will challenge to disrupt matters.
Try to make sure it works, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it's only the solicitor seeking to do the best they can for you. And particularly if you are choosing to do something in your will that could cause controversy after your death. So that could be, you know, excluding a child is kind of the most common one that I tend to come across. But certainly if you are somebody who's perhaps been married more than once and you've got more complex family arrangements that, you know, people don't get on, then certainly it's something that you should consider carefully about getting some sort of medical evidence to demonstrate that you've got the capacity to make a will. You know, essentially a well-written capacity report can go quite a long way to defending a challenge on the grounds of testamentary capacity after your death. And what I would point out is the costs of obtaining that report. You'll have to generally pay a little bit of money to get such a report, but the costs for that report are insignificant compared to the costs of the parties in dealing with a dispute after your death. So it's really important to sort of, you may not be here when this dispute's arising, but you know, it will have adverse impact on the people that you want to benefit from your estate. So the more that you can do during your lifetime, the better, really. And that is one of the things you could do, is get a medical report.
That makes a lot of sense. Really, what you're doing is you're arming your future wishes with the ammunition to make it come true if it's challenged, to defend a potential dispute, especially if you've perhaps done something that might seem controversial or controversial to one of the parties, if you've perhaps changed your will or something along those lines.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, Emma. That's really interesting and I think really useful to our clients to have this kind of thought process, which I think a lot of clients don't necessarily have prior to making a will. They think about what they want to do in their will, but they don't necessarily think to how could it potentially make sure that actually what I want actually comes into fruition.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way also of demonstrating that a person knew and approved the contents of their will at the time they made it?
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, much easier with a solicitor-made will than a homemade will, because it should be evidence on the solicitor file. If you make a will at home, you know, there isn't a file there to demonstrate kind of what went on. So usually best practice would be for a solicitor to be able to demonstrate that they've explained the clauses of the will to you. So this could be by writing to you with a copy of the draft will and a letter sort of explaining all the clauses, or it could be they're sitting down in person with you, or perhaps over Zoom or Teams these days, explaining what the will does. Then that would definitely help in showing knowledge and approval of the will. Now, most solicitors would like to see their clients when they're executing the will, which is signing it. So they would normally go through and explain the contents of the will at that point. So what you might want to do is make sure that your solicitor is keeping a detailed attendance note, which can then be put on your will file, which sets out the explanation that you've had and any questions or queries that you've had. So any letters and any attendance notes of any meeting should be on your will file. But, you know, there's no harm in just asking your solicitor to confirm that that is going to be the case if you're worried about something arising after your death. And certainly if you're not sure about anything, then do make sure that you ask the solicitor to explain it further, particularly if you're making a more complex will that's perhaps got some trust clauses or something just a bit more out of the ordinary. Do make sure that you understand it, and also that there's a note that you've understood it on the file, and that should help defend any challenge on knowledge and approval grounds.
That makes sense to me. So really there's a number of processes really to making the will, and that can all be evidence. So you have perhaps have an initial meeting that your wishes are taken, they're drawn up into the will, you're then written to say this is what the will does, this is what your instructions were, can you confirm, and you then have a process of signing or typical other steps So it's really an evidence base that this is what I really wanted. If it has challenged that, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned before kind of duress, undue influence, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, people concerned that someone really didn't want to make these wishes and that, but that's what is evidenced in a document now. Can you tell us a little bit more about when that might come into play?
Yeah. So undue influence is something that people will regularly sort of raise in relation to wills, but it is incredibly difficult to demonstrate. And I think it is probably a little bit misunderstood as well. So undue influence is more than someone being asked to leave a particular gift in their will. So, for example, there's nothing to stop a child saying to their parent, please, can you leave me, you know, your Ferrari or some certain fields of a farm or whatever is relevant to that person's estate. Undue influence has to be something more than mere persuasion. So it must be that the free will of that person making the will has been essentially completely overwhelmed. So they don't really want to do what they're doing, but they don't feel like they've got any alternative. So usually the court would be looking for there being no other reasonable explanation for the terms in that will. And obviously that is very difficult. So it is a high hurdle to get over for somebody challenging a will on the grounds of undue influence. But that doesn't mean that they might not try. And like I say, it is something that's regularly raised. And for example, if one child is preferred over their siblings, then often, you know, the disappointed children will be the ones raising undue influence. And it may be because that child has been living with their parents and providing care, and that's the reason that they've had been given more from the estate. But equally, there's a risk, obviously, of that person being put under influence by the person providing that care. So it's trying to look at all of that together. But it is hard. It is hard to prove. But, you know, it is something that people need to be aware of.
I would also imagine that because of that, experienced solicitors, obviously we have them here, I don't want to oversell that, but be aware of that when people make wills. So, you know, presumably they go through a number of other perhaps tests or ask detailed questions of the person who's making the will.
Yeah. Yes, they should bring up, particularly if, you know, a good solicitor will ask quite a lot of questions about somebody and their family and why they're doing what they want to do with their will. So it's really important for you as somebody seeing a solicitor about a will to be quite upfront with your sort of, you know, the makeup of your family or your personal relationships and who's important to you. Now, firstly, the solicitor should ask to see you alone, because, you know, without any of the beneficiaries present, because it's quite normal for particularly an elderly person making a will for a child to take them into the solicitors. But best practice would be that the solicitor will keep that child outside of the room when they're taking instructions for that will. And again, a later confirmation of this can be used in the defence of any will challenge made. So if your solicitor hasn't asked to see you alone, and like you said, they really should, then, you know, you want to make sure that there's no one else in the room with you when you're giving instructions for your will, only you and your solicitor, and that you ask, again, that a note's put in your will file to that effect. I think sometimes, as you sort of mentioned about keeping a good record, that's really key later on. And certainly a full and comprehensive will file is probably the best defence to any will challenge. So, you know, you want to make sure that the solicitor is recording all of it. There's no point in them following best practice if they then don't record it on their file to show that that's mm-hmm. been the case.
That makes sense. It's that evidence link again, isn't it? You mentioned earlier Inheritance Act claims. Could you tell us a little bit more about those and who would potentially be able to bring one?
Yes, so Inheritance Act claims are technically claims brought under the Inheritance Provision for Family Independence Act 1975, quite a long title, which is why we just call them Inheritance Act claims. So they're claims for reasonable financial provision from a person's estate. So sometimes people see them as a will challenge. They're not essentially a will challenge because they're not saying that the will that's been made isn't valid. It's really to do with that the person bringing the claim is saying that they haven't been left enough, essentially. Mm-hmm. So they can be brought by spouses, they can be brought by former spouses in some circumstances, though that would normally be dealt with at the time of any divorce and any financial arrangements being made. But there are still some circumstances where former spouses can bring claims. It could be by a cohabiting partner. Could be by children, whether minors or adults. It could be by someone treated as a child of the family. So that's a fairly recent addition in terms of the legislation. But that could, for example, be a stepchild. Or it could be anyone who's essentially a dependent and who's been maintained by the deceased. So more often that would normally be a family member. But it doesn't have to be a family member. It could be anybody if they've been receiving regular financial maintenance or even just a roof over their head from the deceased. So it's quite a broad range of people that can bring a claim for reasonable financial provision.
Great, thank you. We also kind of looked at some of the other types of claims or the other types of risks and how you would mitigate against those. If you were making a will, is there a good way to mitigate against one of these types of claim?
Yes, I mean, you can. I mean, again, I think professional legal advice about your will is key, particularly if you have been providing for somebody. You need to really think about who you're providing for in your will, but equally it is important who you're not providing for in your will. So if you are giving financial assistance to someone, it's really important that you do think about carefully, because simply excluding that person because you've been giving them lifetime assistance doesn't necessarily mean they wouldn't have a claim after your death. So if you do want to exclude somebody who might make a claim on the estate, then be open with your solicitor about it. If there's particular reasons why you want to exclude them from the will, then, you know, explain them to your solicitor. It's quite common for a solicitor to help a client almost write, it could be almost like a letter or a little note to explain why they've excluded certain people and what reasons for those. So, for example, if the child has been estranged from their parent for quite a long time and that's why they've been excluded from the will, then the parent might want to leave a note explaining exactly, you know, the fact that they haven't seen their child and for how long, and that's why they're excluding them from the will. Now, that won't always necessarily deter an Inheritance Act claim, but it does give that evidence after your death. And obviously, that's the time when you can't speak for yourself and you know, the documents are kind of doing it for you. I mean, one way that you may be advised to deal with it is essentially to leave a smaller gift to the person that you intend to exclude, which could deter a claim, because if they think their claim is worth a certain amount of money, but you've left them a smaller amount, that might be enough simply just to put them off of the stress and the hassle and the costs of dealing with it. Because every person's situation is different, taking advice is really key. And because obviously also your personal circumstances can change over time, then it's really important that you keep your will under review. So it's not so much about just making a will, it's making sure that your will is up to date, is kept under review, and that you're thinking about it, you know, every 2 or 3 years.
It's life-changing events, isn't it, that you think out, buying new property, selling new property, giving away assets, setting up businesses. Definitely look at making those reviews.
Yeah.
Thanks, Emma. When I'm out and about, when I'm at the marsh, visiting clients on farm, a lot of people are asking me about proprietary estoppel. It's become a bit of a buzzword. A lot of people are talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know our clients are desperate to know a bit more about it. What are these type of claims? Can you talk us through those, please?
Yes, so they do arise most commonly within farming families. So proprietary estoppel, which is a bit of a mouthful, that those sort of claims relate to promises made. So essentially, if you make a promise to someone that they will receive property, and then that person goes on to reasonably rely on that promise, and by reasonably relying on that promise, they suffer a detriment, they may seek to claim on your estate if that promise is then not fulfilled at a later date. So it's probably easier if I give an example, but it is quite complex. So the common example, particularly in farming estates, is that a child working on the family farm does so for either reduced pay or perhaps for no pay at all, because they're given assurances that they're going to get the farm, that the farm will be theirs on the death of their parents. But it may be, and obviously it's difficult with families working together, there could be a later fallout, which means the parents change their mind and they leave the farm to somebody else. But in this instance, a court may simply order that the farm passes to the claimant, so to the child that's been disappointed. I mean, each case does turn on its own facts, but on that case, for example, the child's clearly suffered a financial detriment because they, you know, they've worked for reduced or little pay, and they wouldn't have done that if they hadn't been promised the farm. So the court will look as to whether it would be unfair for the parents to go back on that promise, and if they deem that it's unfair, then they may well, like I say, order that the farm is transferred very differently to any will made or any intestacy that's left after someone's death.
That's a tricky topic, isn't it? It's that old kind of saying that people refer back to, one day so then this will all be yours. And if circumstances change, typically through family events or people wanting to change things or a misunderstanding, I suppose, of the parties and what they thought those words meant, it leads back to what I say a lot to clients, which is have discussions. If you're a family who intend to farm together and want to pass, please have those early discussions. Don't let people be in the dark or not understand what's going to happen. It's so much easier when people know what they're working towards.
Yeah,
I feel, and it's about those succession discussions, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I think it's, as you said, it's very important for people to be open about what they're intending to do, and if there have been any promises, that everyone understands what those promises are. So yeah, sitting down with your family, discussing your intentions and taking legal advice about any steps that you need to put into the plan's interaction. So whether that's a partnership agreement, whether it's a declaration of trust over certain assets, whatever it may be, it's important to take that advice during your lifetime. And as I said, just be aware that if you fall out with somebody, if you have made promises to them over, you know, a significant period, that simply cutting them out of the will might not solve your problems. So it might be best to sort of tackle those head on during lifetime and take some advice about how to sort that out, really.
Thanks, Emma. You also mentioned, in terms of the categories of potential dispute, administration disputes. How do those tend to arise? And can you tell us a little bit more about those, please?
Yeah. So as I said, administration disputes are incredibly common. So they come up in the administration of an estate after somebody's death. So sometimes they come up between the personal representatives appointed to deal with the estate. Sometimes it's the personal representatives in dispute with the beneficiaries. And other times it's the beneficiaries in dispute with themselves. So you can see there's sort of ripe for dispute. There's lots of parties that can fall out. It could be there's a disagreement about the assets in the estate, whether there's been any lifetime gifts, for example, which can obviously affect the tax on the estate, whether assets have been correctly valued. That's often something that people will fail to agree on. So, you know, one thing you can do is keep a record of your assets and any significant lifetime gifts that are made so that the people administering your estate can refer to those after your death, which will help them in their role.
Thank you, Emma. So you'd mentioned administration of the estate there. Who tends to administer the estate, and is there any kind of tips, tricks as to who you should use, potentially avoid, anything like that?
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the administration of an estate, if you make a will, you'll appoint executors, so they will be the ones that administer your estate. If you don't make a will, then the right to administer your estate is set out in law, and it will fall in accordance with those rules. So it could be your spouse often, or it could be your children if you don't have a spouse. So there are certain rules, so it can fall to siblings. It completely depends on personal circumstances of each person. So executors are appointed by the will. Intestacy, you would have an administrator, but essentially they're both kind of fall into the category of personal representatives. So they're effectively doing the same job, but with a slightly different job title, essentially. So what I would say is you should really think carefully who to appoint as an executor when making a will. A lot of the disputes that I deal with that were under the term of administration disputes are between executors. So, for example, it could be that a person's appointed all four of their children, but they just don't get on. They've never got on. So it's always going to be a bit of a headache. And as soon as their parents are gone, you know, people don't always hold back in terms of falling out and allegations that sort of get thrown around. So you do really need to think about that carefully. So if there's a risk at all that they're not going to work well together, then there's a really high risk of the dispute after your death. So you might want to think about appointing an independent third party who could act alongside what we refer to as lay executors. Could be a solicitor. They'll obviously remain neutral when dealing with the estate. So we have at St. Anne's, we have a St. Anne's Trust Corporation who can be appointed as an independent personal representative, or indeed a trustee for any trusts. And I think just having somebody who can take a step back, isn't emotionally involved, doesn't have the emotional baggage that a lot of executors or administrators would have in an estate, does help to sort of move things forward. And, you know, you don't want the people administering your estate to fall out, because that just means that everything slows down and your beneficiaries aren't getting what, you know, you want them to have. So it is really something, again, to think about, to take advice on, and just, you know, be pragmatic about who it should be, because children might be the obvious choice. But if they're not going to get on together, then you might want to think about an independent instead.
That makes sense. Okay, so kind of to summarise, what would you say are the kind of key considerations for people thinking about their estates, making wills? If you were kind of going to give them a number of points on a list, mm-hmm. what are the key things that you think they should think about having in mind?
Yeah, I mean, estate disputes generally do seem to be on the rise, but that doesn't mean, as you said, that you can't do certain things to try and avoid a dispute after your own death. As I said, really take proper legal advice from a qualified professional. Be open with your solicitor about your personal circumstances. Obviously, they have a duty of confidentiality to you, so anything you say to them is kept confidential. So there's things that you can say to them that they're not going to repeat to anyone else. They're the ones that can best advise about how to deal with any potential issues that arise after your death. So, you know, you don't want to choose a solicitor that you can trust and have a good conversation with about, you know, your life history almost, because it is something that needs a lot of careful consideration about who you might want to benefit from your estate after your death. All I would say is also don't put it off. It's very easy to put off making a will and hope that everything's going to be okay after you're gone. It's easy to think that I'll appoint all four children, I'm sure, will be fine if they're all executors. If you're pretty sure that it's not going to be, you really want to take that into account. And what I would also point out is that the costs for you of taking advice during your lifetime are going to be a drop in the ocean compared to potentially what your beneficiaries could look at spending in terms of legal advice when it comes to defending any sort of claim on the estate, whether it be a will challenge, whether it be a priority estoppel claim, Inheritance Act claim, any sort of administration dispute. So it really is best to get some proper legal advice, sit down, open and honest with your solicitor, and just help them tackle any issues that might crop up.
Thanks, Emma. This has been really fascinating for me as well, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will agree with that. I think a few takeaway points for me: make sure that the person you've got to do your will is specialist. There's a lot of things coming out here that there's the steps that they can actually take to mitigate the risks, and a lot of those will come straight from a specialised solicitor who will make sure you're alone, make sure you've thought about everything right, so you put the proper evidence in place to avoid a potential challenge. Ultimately, this is about your wealth and assets and things being passed to who you want them to be, and you don't want anything standing in the way of that. I think importantly, think carefully in advance about what you want, know what you want, and please do something, put the will in place. We see a number of situations where people do pass without will in place, and some of the things that actually that can lead to, those people, I'm sure in a lot of those cases, would not want those assets to go to the place that they actually end up, and actually that causes a lot more delay, frustration and upset. So please, if you're going to do something, please make sure that you do get it in place, and also don't do nothing. Make sure that you are ready and you've given your beneficiaries and the people you want to see prosper following your sad passing the best possible chance. Thank you.
Thank you both. Enjoyed listening to that. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk. And that includes all of our Rural Roundup with Tom Wills podcast series episodes. And also, Emma has a wealth of content on her section of the website as well, which I do suggest that you check out. And you can also follow the Rural team on Twitter at Sintons Rural. Okay, contact details. If you'd like to discuss anything our speakers have raised today, please don't hesitate to get in touch with them. Tom can be contacted via telephone 019-1226-7878 or via email tom.wills@sintons.co.uk. Same phone number for Emma. Email address obviously is different, emma.saunders@sintons.co.uk. Thank you to both our speakers. Thank you once again for listening. We'll be back with you in about a month's time, and we'll speak to you then. Stay safe, everyone.